everybody. I'm Charles, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm very grateful to be here, and I'm grateful to be sober. I can't. Paul, look where miracles happen. Oh my God, I'm so excited to be here. I'm speechless. Not really. I mean, because I can get started. You'll get me started, and I'll go and go and go. But I have to say that it's been such a wonderful, wonderful weekend. I can't even describe to you. I have heard all the speakers, all the speakers have been sharing about how they've been welcomed in the gift baskets and everything that they talked about that they have received from the committee. And I have to thank the committee as well. When I opened my gift basket, there was a letter. And everybody signed it. And it says, thank you for coming. And it says, keep coming back. Miracles happen. And I'm so grateful to be here. And I'm so grateful to be a member of the program of alcoholics. Are you okay, honey? Oh, my God.
Where's Milton? He's supposed to be cleaning. Milton, where are you?
And this has been absolutely wonderful. You know, I got up, I turned out in sobriety. Who knew? I turned out to be a big morning person. And so so I got up this morning, and I was out, 6 o'clock, and I was doing some work. I had to catch up on some work because, of course, I have to go back to work tomorrow, and I've done nothing all weekend. And so I had a big pile of stuff there, and I was sitting outside, and it was cool and crisp, and there was the creek. And I was reminded of Carrie's talk yesterday when she talked about the catfish. And the ripples, and it is amazing that I can even be here and have an experience like this. And I want to thank you guys for making this possible. This is amazing. I remember getting the telephone call from Don, and he was just so nice and generous, and just it's been wonderful. And I want to just thank you one more time. I remember when I was 90 days sober, and there was, my home group was a Thursday night meeting. It was an e-bell club meeting, and I remember there was a guy who had been asked to lead the meeting, and he thought that he was supposed to go around and ask, people to do all the reading and all that kind of stuff. And he came up to me and said, Charles, do you want to read chapter 5? And I said, oh, yeah, okay, I'll read chapter 5. And then what he found out a little bit later was that the secretary already lined all that stuff. It was like a real, kind of organized situation. And he came back to me, and he felt horrible. I could just see the look on his face. He said, Charles, you can't read chapter 5, but do you want to lead us in the Lord's Prayer at the end? And I thought, oh, the Lord's Prayer. And I remember turning to Billy P., who was a member of the Bellflower Big Book group next to me, and I asked him, I said, should I start it off Our Father or Whose Father? And he's all, no, you should start off Our Father, because that's how the prayer begins. And I thought, the whole meeting long, 90 minutes long, I practiced, And then I remember at the end, we all this time, Charles is going to read us, is going to lead us in the Lord's Prayer. And we all stood up, and there's this whole big circle of people all standing there. It was this huge meeting. It was like this size, a little bit bigger maybe. And all the way around, everybody was holding hands, and then it was dead silent. And I said, Our Father. And everybody joined in. And they finished the prayer. And then I remember going around to all the old timers afterward asking, so how was I? How was I? And they're all, oh, and see, and this is what I love about Alcoholics Anonymous, because they didn't say, what an idiot you are. What do you mean? Like, that was dumb. They said, oh, you were wonderful. I'm like, oh, I could die now. Oh, it's good. I got sober I got sober a couple of times. And one of the times, the last time I got sober in the little clubhouse called the Round Table, which is in Long Beach. And I need to get some stuff out of the way. I got sober after a particularly intense Cinco de Mayo party, which started on April the 26th. I had taken a drinking tequila because I thought you couldn't smell it on me, you know, and I've since found that no, that's not true. And but what happened was I ended up crawling through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous on April the 28th. And when we got here tonight, you know, we rushed in at the last minute because, of course, there's issues at home. And we got in, and Nick and I, my partner Nick, and we sat in the back there. We sat down just as Tom was getting up to talk. And he got up and he said, my birthday is April the 28th. And he celebrated 18 years worth of continuous sobriety. And it was such an honor because my birthday is April the 28th. And this last Thursday, right here, I celebrated 24 years worth of continuous sobriety, which is the longest. Yeah, that's a big deal. It's the longest I have ever gone, you know, between drinks, if you know what I'm saying. And it was just such an exciting thing. And it was one of those, you know, I don't know if it really is or not, but when he said that his birthday had just been the day before, and I thought, oh, mine too. Of course, I had to go, oh, the hand of God is at work. Do that. Anyway, so my birthday is April the 28th, 1987. I crawled through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, and there was a meeting. You need to know about me that I cannot go 4 hours without a drink. I'm the kind of alcoholic, I can't go more than 4 hours. I can't go 4 hours without a drink. And on April the 27th, I was drinking just as sure as I was to draw my next breath. And here's the thing, if you're new, because I know there's newcomers out there that didn't identify, or you're in your first 90 days or whatever, and I want to welcome you to AA. But I could not stop drinking. And on April the 27th, I was drinking just as sure as I was to draw my next breath. And on April the 28th, I was sober. I could not drink, and then I was sober. And I got up in the morning, and it was like 9:30 or whatever, and I walked to a meeting. It was kind of nearby where I lived in Long Beach at the Round Table. And I didn't time it right. I got there 10 minutes early. And I sat there in the meeting, and the secretary was running around asking people to, you know, read this and do that and whatever. And I was absolutely terrified that he was going to ask me to read chapter 5. And then he didn't, and I got mad. Look what you did to me after all this. And that was my first day sober, was that day. And I was thinking this morning, I was thinking about it, and I thought, you know, and that was all I had done on that day. But the next day I got up and I went to another meeting. And I kept going to meetings and kept going to meetings. And that's where I took my first step, was there at the Round Table. And eventually I had to do the rest of the steps. But I'm getting ahead of myself. I need to tell you, I have a sponsor, a guy, his name is Doug. Doug Schuett, S. That's S. Doug S. And I have a home group. My home group is the Monday Night Seal Beach Speakers Meeting, a fellowship of men and women who normally would not mix. And I've been going to that meeting since I was 5 years sober. Tomorrow I will have gone to that meeting. Tomorrow, secretary's night. I was also the secretary of that meeting too. First openly gay secretary of the Monday Night Seal Beach Speakers Meeting. And they have a tradition where they have, you know, a male secretary, female secretary, male secretary, female secretary, and then it went male, me, male. And I thought, oh, hello. I don't know if anybody even noticed, you know, but that's how it kind of worked out. But we had fun. But I go there, and, you know, what I was thinking was that whenever I go to a meeting where it's a gay group like this, it always makes me think of my men's stag that I go and see my sponsor at, which is on Tuesday night. Okay, so it's me and 20 straight guys, right? And I started going there like 10 years ago, and, you know, I'd be there, we read the 12 and 12, and after the meeting, a guy came up to me and said, hey, Charles, do you think you would be able to listen to part of my inventory? And I was so honored. I was so honored that this guy came to me and he wanted to read, he wanted to share something with me out of his inventory. And so then he dragged me behind the church, you know, and read this thing off to me. And I had been like, you know, oh, look, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, it transcends sexual orientation, and we're all united together in one big, you know, loving tradition of, you know, unity. And look at this straight, there is no straight, there is no gay, nothing. And then, like, after the 10th guy did it, he whipped out the paper. I said, oh, don't tell me. You're going to share that you blew the dope dealer for a bindle of coke. And he was like, oh, yay. Charles, are you psychic? How did you know that? How did I know that? And I told him, I said, you know what? I said, you can read that piece to me, and I'm sure I would enjoy it very much. I'm sure I would enjoy it very much. But you know what? It's not going to have the juice that it needs to have for you to go and tell that bulldog, you know, Irishman over there who's your sponsor that you did that, so that he can say to you, oh, I did that too. And that one of the things that happened for me, one of the great miracles of Alcoholics Anonymous when I sat in the meetings at the round table was that I identified with the people. I identified with the stories. I knew what they were going to say before they said it. I laughed so hard, like from the belly, so deep, when they would tell their stories. And I can tell you, I'm a school teacher today, and the PTA does not think those same stories are funny. Oh, well. So we learn. Well, we learn. I need to get into this right away because, you know, a good meeting starts on time and ends early. That's what I always say. I want to mention that, you know, I was born, I popped out of a larva on October 9th, 1962. We lived in Glendale Memorial Hospital. We lived in La Crescenta, which is a suburb of Glendale. And, you know, all my life, for the earliest feelings I can remember, are feelings of restlessness, irritability, and discontent. And nothing was ever good enough. And I was a high anxiety, very intense little boy. And I don't know why that is. I don't know why that is. What I understand today is that this is the predisposition for the disease of alcoholism. And I could have used a drink back then. I remember I had my first drink. I was 14 and a half years old. We were traveling through. I actually had been sent off to boarding school in Geneva, Switzerland. And when I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous, I remember talking with my sponsor, and I said, well, you know, I was a high bottom drunk, which meant that my parents belonged to the country club. But me, I know, I was like a big gutter. You know, I lived in this cave apartment with cockroaches and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And my sponsor told me, he said, Charles, you weren't a high bottom drunk. You weren't even clearing the rooftops, you know. And but so they sent me off to this boarding school, and I don't know why they did this. They sent me there to go to learn how to speak French. I have no idea why they did that, but they did. And this is me on the cover of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. The night before I went on that trip to go spend my first summer there, my dad gave me a present. It was a camera, and I was like, oh, what's that for? And he's like, well, so you can take pictures while you're on your trip. And I was like, oh, okay. And so I went, and I was there the whole summer. And, you know, and I had that camera. It was a Kodak Instamatic. I took pictures. I took, you know, $300 worth of pictures back in 1976 is a lot of money, right? $300 worth of pictures, all these pictures. And I got home, and my mom, you know, she, you know, had them all developed and came back and, you know, set the big stack, boom, on the table. And I still have the photo album. I just pulled it out of my storage unit. I still have the photo album. I had taken hundreds of pictures. I had taken pictures of swans and castles and trains. And in Geneva, there's this big clock that's all made out of flowers. I took pictures of flowers. I took all this stuff. There are no people in this photo album. There are no people in this photo album except this one lady. And my mom, you know, I was sitting down, and she was looking, we were putting the pictures in the photo, and she goes, oh, who's this? And I could see you guys. I could see the glimmer of hope, you know, washed across your face. Oh, was this one of your friends? And I was embarrassed to tell her it was the first time I'd seen a woman with hairy legs. I had to capture that on film, you know? Oh, my God. And so there, traveling through Europe, you know, those feelings that I had, feelings of restlessness, irritability, discontent, it was a knot. It was like I carried around a sausage grinder and said that I was constantly chewing on glass. That's how I felt, really. Like I was chewing on glass all the time. And what happened was I came back to the United States, and no, while I was there, I had my first drink. It was a liter of Gamay Beaujolais 78, which I ordered because I could pronounce it. And, you know, really, one of the things, the driving machinery behind all these feelings was that, you know, I just absolutely hated myself. And, you know, before I took my first drink, I remember thinking, what is wrong with me? And I thought I'd figured it out. You know, what my problem really was that I was a geek. You know, and I was pretty bad. I was the pocket protector geek. You know, I was the one who wheeled the film projector into your classroom from the multimedia center, you know. I was in the marching band. I played the glockenspiel, you know. Oh, I played the glockenspiel in the marching band. I played the oboe in the concert band. And people would ask me, I'd have my little oboe case, and they'd ask me, what's that, a flute? Because you know how they are, mean bullies. What's that, a flute? And I'm like, no, it's an oboe. And they're like, what? elbow? You play the elbow? And I'm like, no, the oboe. Oh. But I just absolutely hated myself. I hated myself. And what a blessing to come to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and to read in the big book that we make decisions based on self, which later places us in a position to be hurt. And for me, the feelings that I had about myself, the self-loathing, the hatred, those were the things that drove the desire for me to have a drink, because I hated who I was and I wanted to be somebody else. And something I was at our Friday night meeting like about a month ago or whatever, and I remember sharing about that, you know, one of the things always that I still struggle with is wanting to be somebody else, that somehow in and of myself I am not enough, that I want to be someone else. And, you know, just it can't be okay, you know, that my favorite color is green. I want to be have it blue so I could be like that guy over there. You know what I mean? Always that. And I made the decision, and I looked around. This was particularly horrible for me. I was a geek. You know, I was a geek, and my sister, she was one of those varsity cheerleading types with a trick pelvis. She said, give me a V, and her legs would go up in the air, you know. And she was really popular, you know. And she was popular. And I wasn't. I was just this geek. And I have to tell you, this is something I don't always share about because I just hate being in that, you know, in that thing, but here we are, where miracles happen. And I remember, I just knew that people could see that horrible thing inside of me. I just knew they could see it. And I thought, you know, I don't want to be a geek. I want to be popular. And so I made a decision. I looked around at all the popular people, and I thought, well, what is it about them that makes them popular? And the thing that I wired into was that they partied, and they drank, and they had a good time. And I thought, I'm going to do that. And I took my first drink traveling through Switzerland. It was, a liter of Gamay Beaujolais 78. Well, it sounds good. You can buy it in the States. It's like $1.99 a box. That's true. How embarrassing that I said that out loud. But what happened was I took that first drink. And, you know, I took that first drink, and I am one of the people that in the beginning I didn't like it. I didn't like the first hit. It made me feel, you know, I like gagged a little, kind of threw up a little in my mouth, you know, that kind of. And I thought, oh. But I am an alcoholic. And when you put alcohol in an alcoholic's body like mine, that knot I had loosened up and felt like it was going to go away. It felt like it was going to go away. I looked around at the people that I had around me, not after the first one, it was after the second one. And, you know, it's funny because Nick was talking the other day about he had just cleaned the sheets at home. And he said, I love climbing into a bed with clean sheets. It's like having the second drink. You know, that's the second one. And I remember feeling like, oh, there's all these people, and I can reach out, and I can talk, and I wanted to get to know you. And that was the thing that alcohol did for me. I felt like I had genuine feelings for other people. I felt like I could talk to you. I felt like I cared about you. And without the alcohol, I didn't have that. And I became an instant. I came back to the States. I was a morning drinker. My mom would drop me off at high school. I was in high school. She'd drop me off. I'd bye mom, kiss, one. Then I go hook up with my friends, and we ditch class and hang out in the parking lot and smoke cigarettes and marijuana and drink. And my heroes went from people who were, you know, Shakespeare, Euclid, Wally and the Beef, you know, to people who cut class. And I remember we stole the baritone saxophone out of the band room and pawned it so that we could buy weed. And I thought, this is fabulous. This is absolutely fabulous. You know, we were last night, oh God, Lori was so funny last night when she was talking about the slideshow and the music from the slideshow. Remember that? All the 70s stuff. And you know, what did I do? I parted my hair down the middle, feathered it back, got the puka shells and the angel flight pants and the platform shoes. And I thought it was going to be a whole new me. And here I am being cool and being popular and having fun. And this was it. And that was my junior year in high school. And I loved it. I loved everything about it. I was a person. I love the experience, not just the, you know, the feeling was everything. There's an inside and an outside to the drunk. And I love the outside to it. I just loved it. And at the end of that year, I said something to myself that I was to say for a long time, even coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, and that was this, because I was, flunking out of school, which became a problem for my mom, who was the PTA president. Oops, sorry, I love you. And but what happened was, at the end of that year, I said, you know, I'm going to take all of this stuff and I'm going to put it away, and now's, here it is, my famous last words, now's my chance to get it together. Now I'm going to get it together. And I have a disease, I have a deadly disease, a terminal progressive disease of alcoholism that doesn't have anything to do with my drinking, only peripheral. It has to do with how I feel when I'm not drinking. And I didn't know that. I didn't know that. And I went, at that time, 9 months, my senior year, I went 9 months with nothing, nothing. And at the end of that 9 months, I had this like psychotic break. I mean, I like flipped out. I you know, picked a fight with my mom. She was in my bedroom. I picked up my desk chair. I was threatening to kill her. I said absolutely hateful, hateful things to my mom. And things you should never say. And as a result of that, they invited me to leave. She was going to call the police. It's for your own good, honey. You know, this whole thing. And what happened? What happened was they kicked me out. They said, you can't, you got to go, you got to go. And so I remember it was the night before I left. I had my little Volkswagen Rabbit. I filled it up with all my worldly possessions, and my sister did a drive-by and left me a little baggie of weed as a parting gift, and I moved to Long Beach. And, I always say I spent my first night in Long Beach on the corner of Roycroft and Division and Belmont Shore in my car. You know, I was in my car parked, and I didn't know what to do, and I was 17 years old, and I was a complete wreck. I had no idea what to do. And I remember that first night I took that weed that my sister gave me, and I sat and I rolled, twisted up a few joints and sat there and smoked and listened to the radio. It was 94.7 KMET, classic rock, remember them? And what happened was I passed out, but I left the radio on, which caused the battery to go dead. So kind of like that's my big entree into, your life. Here it is in the car with a dead battery going, what am I doing? What am I going to do? And, I got a little job. I told everybody I was going to go to school. I went to Long Beach State. And, I had dreams. I had dreams. I wanted to go to school. I wanted to finish college. I wanted to be a school teacher. I wanted to have a nice relationship. I wanted to buy a home. I wanted to make something of myself. And these were just things. And, they talk about when I got sober, I would hear stuff about spiritual, and I thought that it had to be so much bigger, and it doesn't, but the vision that I had for my life was a very simple one, and I started to try to do it. I started to try to live that, and I got a little job in this place called the Northwoods Inn, which was this restaurant. It's this big log cabin with snow on the roof at the beach. Now, I can go figure. It was the weirdest fucking place to see, but what happened was I loved that job. I loved working there. I worked there, and I said, I'm going to go to school, and I'm taking classes, and here I am, an alcoholic with, we were talking about how articulate everybody was yesterday, and especially you and Carrie both were talking about tools and having tools and not having tools, and I had nothing. And, so I started to go to school, and I would sign up, and here's me. This is the alcoholic, right? So I go. It's my first semester. I'm paying cash for it. I sign up for 12 units. Well, about a month in, I drop all my classes except for swimming. And I go, so the next semester it comes, I pay cash, you don't meet the goal, so you set the bar higher. And so what I did was I signed up for 15 units. And then I started, one day at a time, I started going to class, and I ended up dropping all my classes except for volleyball. And then the next semester it was, 18 units. I dropped them all. And then the next semester after that, I signed up for 18 units again. And I just, all bets were off. It's like, oh, screw this. I didn't even sign any papers, nothing. I wrote them a bad check. But I was telling people, I was telling people, oh, I'm working. And I had this job at the Northwoods Inn, and I loved working there because it's, you know, like it's this log cabin, and they have this heavy red drapes, and it's dark. It's like a big cave in there, and I loved it. The thing I loved about the Northwoods Inn, though, was that when you got off your shift, you got to have a schooner of beer for 25 cents. Blitz Bavarian Dark, Henry Weinhardt's Blitz Bavarian, 25 cents for this big old thing. And, you know, when I was hired there at the Northwoods Inn, my boss asked me, well, how old are you? And I told him I was 19, and then he said, okay, great. And I said, I want to wait tables. And he said, well, you have to be 21. So my next birthday, I told him, well, I've just turned 21. And he said, great. And so I got to drink and wait tables. And, you know, the thing that happened was it actually wasn't enough money for me, so I had to get a second job. And here is another earmark of my disease of alcoholism. I got this second job, and it was working in this AM/FM mini market. And I was a little cashier. And at the end of the shift, and here it is, watch this alcoholism at play. At the end of the shift, I would count out my drawer, and I would count and see how much money I brought in. And it would be like $300. Okay, so I can't leave that alone. I have to look at how did Joe do? Oh, $3,000. And then I would look at how Matt did. Oh, $6,000. I thought, oh my God. So the next day, same thing. I would look, $250, $6,000, $7,000. I had absolutely no idea. The feelings that I had were, nobody likes to come into the store and shop when I'm working here. I had that feeling every day, 5 days a week. And then when at 3 years, I had that job and did that. I did that to myself every day, 5 days a week for 3 years. And when I gave my notice, and it was my last day, I sat down with my boss, Diane, and I said, Diane, you know, thank you so much for employing me. I want you to know that I did my very best. I tried to companion sell those microwave burritos with that beer, and I tried to sell that coffee, and I kept everything front face, and I waxed those floors, and I did the windows, and I did everything that you asked me to do. And I don't know why it is that I only sell $300 worth of stuff, and everybody else is selling $6,000, $7,500 worth of stuff. And she said, Charles, you work the graveyard shift. Nobody shops then. And I'm like, oh. But for me, right, it's all about me. And they say the selfishness, the self-centeredness, it's not that I'm conceited. It's not that I think that I am better than you all the time. No, it's that I think only of me. I think only about me. And that everything is somehow inexorably connected to me. So what happened? So what happened was I started drinking. I was drinking every day. I was drinking every day. I could not drink. I quit that job. I said, you know, I need to protect my supply. I got a job in a little bar in Long Beach on 4th and Redondo called the Silver Fox. And I became a cocktail waiter at the Silver Fox. And I have to tell you in sobriety that that job has served me very well. I, you know, for a long time I sponsored this little prostitute who, you know, I was a cocktail waiter at the Silver Fox. She was a prostitute. And one day she tried to play that, oh, but you don't understand card. But you don't understand. And she, and I'm like, honey, I was a cocktail waiter. You were a prostitute. The only difference between me and you is that you're in a higher tax bracket. And I remember we were going at that. I was taking her around to meet, you know, to different meetings, and I wanted to get her to the, you know, Bellflower Big. We were going to the Bellflower Big Book because my sponsor at that time was going there, and she hated that meeting. She just hated it. How can you hate the Bellflower Big Book Group? It's one of the most efficiently run operations in all of AA. And she said, "Oh, I hate it." Well, found out we kept running into her tricks, and I told her, I said, "Oh, look, now you can offer the AA discount." She fired my. I asked. She said, I don't want you to be my sponsor anymore. But so I had this job. I'm, you know, the cocktail waiter. And you know what? If you have ever worked in the bar business, oh, it's wild. It's absolutely wild, and I loved it. I would go to work in the morning, and I would work at the Northwoods Inn real hard, and then I would, you know, I'd get warmed up on a couple of schooners, and then I'd get to work, and my shift at the Fox started at 9 o'clock. Oh, and we'd all meet, all the guys, we'd all meet in the well and do the 9 o'clock shot. right? And then we'd work real hard and sell a bunch of booze and go back, and then we'd do the 10 o'clock shot. And then we did the 10:30 shot. And then we did the 10:37 shot, you know? And all bets were off. And I loved it. I loved it. I remember, you know, I wasn't really so much of a blackout drinker. I did have a few. But this one time... I remember this one time I came out of a blackout. I was in Fresno. I was at a little club in Fresno. Like, where am I? Where am I? And the guy goes, "You're at the Express in Fresno." And I'm like, "Oh, wow." And he goes, "You're Charles. You work at the Silver Fox, don't you?" And I was like, "Oh, I'm a star." Look at this. Oh, God. I think you can tell a lot about a person by where they come out of their blackouts. Anyway. So what happened was, you know, I'm drinking uncontrollably. It's like it is the ultimate in protecting your supply. And what happened? What happened was, it was great fun in the beginning, and eventually, because this is a progressive disease, it got worse. It got worse. It gets worse, never better. And if you're in your first year here, that's one of my promises for you. It gets worse, never better. Never, never. And what happened? I was drinking every day. I was drinking every day. I was coming to it at 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm like the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde paragraph where, you know, he's drinking the clock round. He should be sleeping, you know. And no, I come to at 6 o'clock in the morning that I can see the little red letters flashing on the alarm clock. And I'm dying of thirst. I'm so dehydrated. And I reach over and grab that, you know, light beer from Miller that's on the little stereo speaker I'm using as an end table. And that phenomenon of craving, that thing where I want another one, happens. And it kicks in. And I'm drinking in the morning. And I'm just barely getting it to work. And I'm drinking after work. And I'm drinking at home. And I'm going to work again and drinking and drinking. And I can't stop. And I can't stop. And I don't know what's happened to me, and there's no more school, and there's no more people, and there's nothing. And I'm living in this little cave of this apartment, this little apartment with the shades and telephone unplugged, and I sit in there, and I would listen to records and tapes over and over and over and over again. And it talks in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, in Bill's story, it talks about the chilling vapor of loneliness. And I remember having to turn on the radio so I could hear people's voices. And I didn't know what had happened to me. And I said a prayer, "God, what is wrong with me? What is wrong?" And I got this idea. I don't know where it came from. It was to call Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I did. I called AA. And the guy said, "How can I help you?" Because, of course, I'm a redneck, answered the phone. "How can I help you?" And I said, you know, and I don't know why. I don't know why. This is the miracle. Is, I mean, if I had ever heard, you know, that kind of voice that I would attach to, like, a Marine sergeant 70-plus years old from the South, I would have hung up the phone. And here's the miracle. I told him the truth. I said, "I'm having a problem with drinking. I think I'm having a problem drinking." And he said, "Well, why don't we have someone come and take you to a meeting?" And I told him, "No, that would be okay. I would find the meeting myself." And he gave me a couple of places right around where I lived. And I didn't go to a meeting. But I had said that prayer. I had said that naked prayer. What am I going to do? And what happened was, God did for me what I could not do for myself, and I got arrested. And I got arrested. And if you have come to Alcoholics Anonymous as a result of an arrest, and if you have a court card, I want to extend a hand of empathy on your unfortunate incarceration. And I want you to know, I want you to know that I have been to jail 3 times in sobriety. There's a little hope for you. I always knew which court card was mine. It had the big wine stain on it. And I remember going to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was a Thursday night. It was Cherry Park in Long Beach, and it started at 8:30, and I loved it. And once a month, they had a speaker. And I remember one of the first ones I went to there was the speaker, and the speaker got up, and he started talking, and he was telling these funny stories, and I was laughing, and oh, my God, everybody was laughing, and we were, you know, kind of rocking and rolling, as it happens in Alcoholics Anonymous, and laughing and laughing. And then, oh, he was saying a real dramatic part. It was dead silent, and I was on the edge of my seat. And then he started to talk about God. And I was like, "God, no, stop it." And I wanted to get up and go, "Stop it. You're ruining it. You're ruining it. You're ruining it. No, God." And, well, we're stuck. Sorry. We're stuck here with the G word in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had my first spiritual experience there. I had my first spiritual experience, although I couldn't have told you that that's what it was at that time. And what happened? I was going to my little 502 school. They said, you have a terminal disease. It's just like cancer. Eventually, you're going to die from it. And I thought, they said, if you're an alcoholic, you can't drink anymore. And I thought, well, that's okay. I'd rather smoke pot anyway. And so that's what I did. I had my last drink at that time on February the 2nd, and then I started a little marijuana maintenance. And I have to tell you, I was, waiting tables at the Northwoods Inn. I had a lunch shift. And if you are smoking pot and working in a restaurant, you eat really weird shit. I remember one of my big things was, cheese bread, garlic cheese bread with vanilla ice cream. I love that. Or, I take a few hits and I'd flow it out onto my stage and, hey, can I take your order? And they're like, you already did. Oh, sorry about that. And, and I had moved back in with my high school sweetheart, which is, it should have been like an over, a summer thing, a one-night stand, something. We were together for 8 years. And anyway, he moved back in and, and I remember he would go off to work every day, and I told him, I'd either go to work or I have to go to school or whatever. And so he'd leave, and I don't know how it is, but we ended up with this stray cat. I don't know why we had this stray cat, but what would happen is that I'd sit at home, and after John Day would go off to work, I'd start to smoke pot and watch Christina Ferrari on AMLA. And I just hated, the cat would hop up on the couch, and I just felt kind of bad for it because, I didn't never want to smoke alone. You know what I mean? And so I read in Hemp Magazine that if you blew the THC into the face of your domestic animal, that they would get high too. So what happened was I'd be like, okay, one for me and one for you. And then after a while, I noticed him. He kind of listed over to the side like this. And then I was like, oh, you're high, you're high. And we'd get the munchies at the same time. I'd be doing, nacho cheese-flavored Doritos dipped in raspberry yogurt, and he'd be having, smoked ham. He loved that smoked ham. Oh, and then the county went dry. Oh, this is horrible. The county went dry. And I didn't know, what are we going to do? And the cat had, this psychotic breakdown. Started circling the apartment with his long fingernails and tearing up all the furniture, and I had to let him go. I had to get rid of him. I was like, oh, I'm sorry, you have to go. You're, my only friend. It was totally tragic. My cat. There goes the cat. And all this time I'm saying, Alcoholics Anonymous, I love the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't drink anymore, And I'd go to the restaurant, and I remember looking at the schedule and looking at all the names, all the guys on the schedule. I'd think, oh my God, everybody here's an alcoholic. And I'd be like, he's an alcoholic, he's an alcoholic, he's an alcoholic, he's an alcoholic. There's one Alan on keeping the doors open for business. And I'd go up to him and I'd say, you know what your problem is you need to quit drinking, you're an alcoholic. And they're like, oh, okay. And there was a thing that happened. One of the cashiers, her mom was a big AA diva from the South Bay. And she said, you know what? My mom's going to come in and have lunch, and she's going to sit on your table. And I was so excited about that. And she came in and she sat down, and she said, hi, are you a friend of Bill W's? And I was like, oh, yeah, we used to work together at the Silver Fox. How's he doing? And she's like, he's dead. I hear you go to meetings. I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I remember the lady asking me, well, so when's your birthday? And I told her October 9th. And she's like, well, how many? That's just in a couple of days. How many years? I'm all 23. And she's like, oh, okay. All right, good. And I got to tell you, if you're working a program like that, it'll never last. I love you. I love you. I love you. You are doomed to drink again. And because that's what happened to me. I know. That's what happened to me. And I did. Eventually, I drank again. And one of the things, I love that saying that we have around here, a head full of AA and a belly full of booze. Oh, I love that because it was so much what happened. I took a drink. And they told me, they said, if you take another drink, you're going to pick up right where you left off. And I did. I did. I took a drink. I was out one night. I took a drink. I got in the car. I drove and then was arrested. And they sent me back to you. And I had another court card, and I started going to meetings. And I went to that meeting at the round table. I remember going to that meeting at the round table. and starting my sobriety. And I, for a long time, in my early years, I remember thinking, you know, oh, I wish I could have been one of those ones that stayed so, you know, here it is, wanting to be someone else. I wish I could be one of those guys that stayed sober from their first meeting. What's wrong with me, you know? And my sponsor, I had a sponsor, and he told me, that is your greatest gift. Because you're going to be here for the people who don't stay sober the first time. And there's a lot of them. He said 50% of the people are going to go back out again. And then 50% of them are going to come back. And so I have to tell you that when you really sit down and look at the math, that's 3 out of 4 people. You and two other people are going to stay sober. You and two other people. That's actually pretty good. That's actually pretty good. And I hope that you continue to come and share with us how your life changes in sobriety as a result of working the steps. 2.5 years sober, I almost drank. And I was going to 7 to 9 meetings a week. At that time, I was sponsoring 8 people. I had commitments at every single one of my meetings. I could quote the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous as if I had written it. My favorite is actually really the 12 and 12. Seth can tell you that. And I got a sponsor, this is a guy by the name of Jim Duncan. And he started to teach me how to work. He started to teach me the steps as they are written. And that what I learned was that I had taken the first half of the first step, that I admitted that I was powerless over alcohol, but not that my life had become unmanageable. And it took 2.5 years. And I remember one of the things we started doing is we started living my life. I started, you know, doing the stuff that he told me to do and being in service and all that and working the steps. I wrote another inventory and we got a bunch of stuff cleaned out. And then he said, you know, Charles, what do you want to do with your life? And I told him, I said, you know, and I was embarrassed to tell him this. I said, I want to be a school teacher. And he said, but you have to go to school to do that. And so I started, and I can't tell you how difficult for me, an alcoholic of my kind, going to school was. It took me 18 years to get my degree. From the day I first set foot on, you know, at Long Beach State to the day I turned the tassel over the other side of the cap, the diploma and all the units completed at Dominguez Hills, it took me 18 years. I was 8 years sober before I started getting report cards that had grades on them and not footnotes. And I graduated, and I applied for jobs at Long Beach Unified School District, and they hired me. And they hired me, and they said, okay, and I had a site that I was going to work at, and I was going to teach reading, and English and reading. And I remember they had told me in Alcoholics Anonymous that if you worked the steps and if you performed God, miracles would happen, that, you know, that your visions would come true, that your heart's desire would become known to you, and you would be able to, you know, receive the benefits of the program. And I remember the night before I went to school, I had all my AA friends were over at my house, and they're helping me make little decorations for my classroom. And they went, and there was a roll sheet, and it had names on them, and all the kids showed up, and they were in a line at the door, and I let them in, and we started, and I remember they called me Mr. Norman. Hey, Mr. Norman. And I looked around for my dad, you know, getting my dad somewhere. And I thought, oh, this is it. This is a gift to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I suited up and I showed up, and I have to tell you that at the end of the year, at the end of that school year, there are no words to describe how much I hated that fucking job. Oh, those bastard children. I'm going to throw them out the door. You know, get out of here. I never want to see you again. You know, oh no. And then I was like, now what am I going to do? And I would come home and I would complain. And I have to tell you, my partner, Nick, he was so, I go home and go, oh, I hate my job, I want to quit. And he's like, okay. Okay. And I remember my sponsor told me, you know, I rolled into my second year. And the only reason I stuck with that job is because I needed the benefits to have some gum surgery from all the drugs I had taken during the 80s, you know. And my sponsor told me, they said, you know, Charles, you suit up and you show up one day at a time, every day. But you can leave if you have to. You can leave if you have to. And I just got up and I would go to work. And I have to tell you, I've had that job at that site now. It has been 12 years. And they changed my assignment from reading development and English language, you know, development to French, to teaching French. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this. You know, here, this, like, I was the only one qualified to do it. So I started teaching French and... you know, I didn't really know anything about anything. I'd have to do these culture lessons, and I'd just make shit up, you know. I'd tell them about, you know, Paris. Oh, it's beautiful. You should see the Eiffel Tower, and, you know. And then I remember one girl asked me, she said, have you ever been there? And I'm like, no, but one day I'm gonna. No, but one day I'm gonna. And and in 2005, I got on the airplane. When I turned 18 years sober on April the 28th, 2 months later on June 28th, I got on the airplane and I went to Paris and I went and I studied French there at the Sorbonne and I went to all the places and I came back and I'd have like pictures and posters and stuff I bought there and I could talk about, look, do you see when you get to the Eiffel Tower, when you get to the very top of it, it's cold because it's all open and the first thing that you want to do when you look down is jump. And then the kids are like, well, why do you want to go there? Yeah, you know. But I have to tell you, I did nose to the grindstone. I did nose to the grindstone. I worked really, 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 really hard. And I have improved a lot. And I got a little email from one of my little boys the other day, Saul Garcia. He's learning in computers how to write a formal email. He said, dear Mr. Norman, he said, I always like your class the best because the time goes by fast. I love that. Little Saul. And you know what? And I have to tell you, my first period of the day, I come in and I sit in, you know, the kids come in, they sit down, they're doing their stuff. And the first thing, the very first thing I do is I tell them, I want to thank you for showing up to school. Because if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be able to do my favorite thing in the whole world. And I love those kids. And they give me this, I told them, you know, I like chocolate. So always on my, and I also tell them when my birthday is. It's kind of cheap. It's kind of cheap. It's cheating a little bit, you know. And, you know, I love chocolate. October 9th, don't forget. Like, oh, and I get big baskets of chocolate. And I started at, and one year this girl, she gave me this little, she gave me this, at Christmas time, she gave me this little nutcracker. And I didn't know what to do with this. I didn't know. I thought, oh, someone's going to steal it, you know. So I just stuck it on a shelf. And then, you know, by the end of that Christmas time, there were three of them up there. And I thought, look at that. And then over the years, I put my little nutcrackers up there at Christmas time. And every... Now I've got like 20 of them. And my nutcrackers. And they all want to talk about the nutcrackers. They want to talk about the nutcrackers. And you know what's really sweet about little, like, 11 and 12 years? I didn't know this. But they love it when you open their present in front of them. You open it in front of them. And they love it when you look at them and smile and say thank you. And they especially love it when you send them a thank you card in the mail. And I had a girl, she carried around her little thank you card in her backpack for 3 years. Sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade. And then she showed it to me when she was graduating, the day before she's graduating. Look, look, you sent this to me when I was in sixth grade. And it had a picture of me and her together in this little card. And it was the sweetest thing I'd ever seen. And I have to, oh, I could go on about my little gay guys. Oh, the gay guys. They love French class, the little gay boys, and what they want to do. And they are, and their projects are perfect, you know? They're perfect. And I remember last year, I had this guy, his name was Jonathan Rodriguez. He was this little twiggy little thing, and I always call him, and I always tell him, I say, hey, stud, you know? And he, Mr. Norman called me a stud. And then his friend, Marco Sandoval, goes, do you like my new shirt? And I'm all, oh, I love that. It makes you really handsome. That shirt really makes you look like a Mexican Justin Timberlake. And he's all, oh, that's so sweet. I love that. Yeah, we just kind of took a little trip there, didn't we? Oh my God. All right, so if you're new, I do want to say, well, I just want to say a couple last things, and then I'll shut up because it's a good meeting starts on time and ends early. This past April 28th, I celebrated 24 years worth of continuous sobriety. I had no intent. I never could have told you. I can tell you that last year, I graduated from school. I got my credential. I finished my master's program. I did my master's program in a year and a half. So I went from 18 to a year and a half, you know, so it gets better. I got my job. I teach school. I love my job. I have been with my partner. My partner and I have been together now for 21 years. 21 years. I'm 24 years sober. He's going to be 23 years sober. And then we're going to be together 22 years sober in July. July 17th is our anniversary. And a year ago, we made an offer and we bought a house. And we bought a house. And I have to tell you, I never thought that that would be something that would ever be possible. I didn't think it would be possible for us to buy a house. I couldn't see it. I could not see it. He did. He always had like this vision. And I'm like, how are we gonna afford a house, you know? But I kept saving my little money and, you know, doing that and trying not to rip off the Seven Tradition. And anyway, no, I only did that once and I paid it all back.
last week.
No, that was a couple years ago. But we made the offer and we got our house. And then what happened was that we moved into this beautiful little three bedroom, two bath little house with hard cherry wood floors and this huge tree in the front yard. And the realtor said, you know, you're going to want to get the utilities moved over. And he took care of the cable, and I got the electricity, and neither of us knew that we had to get the gas turned on. Because in my little apartment where we lived for 29 years, we didn't have gas, you know? And so we didn't have any hot water or any food for 2 weeks, in the first 2 weeks in our new house. And then on the third night that we were in there, there's this big tree in the front yard, and the tree branch broke off into the it's this huge thing, right? Broke off into the neighbor's driveway. And I remember Nick kind of shaking me, going, "Hey, Charles, something happened to the tree." I was like, "Oh God, welcome home." You know, here we are. And I'm still unresolved. I was telling Seth was over my house and we were talking about resentment prayers. You know how you're supposed to pray for what you want for yourself for the other person. And it used to be that I prayed for, you know, really hot sex and lots of money and a new car. And now it's like I pray for a new lawn and a sprinkler system. Please let that person get a new lawn and a sprinkler system. But wait, he lives in an apartment too. And I have to tell you that the house, you know, it's a big thing. But what was even bigger was that we had lived for me, I had lived in this apartment for 28 years. For him, it was 22 years. We lived in the same apartment. And the day that we moved out, we started moving. All the people in the apartment came to us and said, "We heard you bought a house. We heard you're going to move. We heard you're going to move." And I remember there's this one lady that every morning we'd see her. She would go next door to Jack in the Box and get a cup of coffee. And she said, "I'm so glad I got to see you before you left. I'm so glad I got to see you before you left." People used to like leave, go, "We don't want to see you anymore," you know? And that was one of the big gifts also when I was new in sobriety, was I remember getting in that car with that sponsor and sitting in the back seat. And then I would sit and I would listen to everybody talking. And they would tell, you know, they would talk, Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to close, I want to say thank you. I want to say thank you. I want to ask you to keep coming back because miracles happen. Thank you.